All right, I'm going to start with the set aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help us to glorify you by carrying your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, we are on step two of the 12 by 12, and we're looking at this book. And this was written in 1952, 13 years after the big book was published. It was not intended to be the textbook of recovery. It was, this book was written to get the 12 traditions into print in a way that people could read and understand so we could keep the fellowship going. And we have traditions and not rules and suggestions. And then they asked Bill W. to write essays on the 12 steps, his view of how things look to him today of the steps. In looking at step two, I could see the difference between this book and the big book. It's not good or bad. The big book will, in step two, you get to it at page 44. You have 43 pages of doctor's opinion to tell you that one, you will never be able to control your drinking, and two, you will never keep from drinking, no matter what you do, if it's you. The only thing that will keep you from drinking again is God. And they hammer home in More About Alcoholism about the queer mental twist that precedes the first drink. Willpower won't work, fear won't work, getting arrested won't work. You have to have a power in your life that will solve your problem. That's what it says in We Agnostics, which is a chapter devoted to helping us become willing to believe that there is a power greater than ourselves that can restore me to sanity, that can show me the truth before the first drink. Now, becoming willing to believe doesn't mean that you won't drink again. Willing to believe means that you're willing to believe that there is something besides you that can help you. Now, my understanding, reading the book and in my life, is that the first step makes you willing. And if you're not willing after your first step, you haven't taken it. The first step is to give me complete willingness to do whatever it takes to relieve this merciless obsession and the lash of alcoholism. And he does a very good job in step one in the 12 and 12 of hammering home, you better be defeated or nothing's going to happen. It's not going to work. And he focuses on the complete defeat aspect and what hitting bottom means versus the big book tells you why you're an alcoholic and why being an alcoholic, you're doomed. And that you have to see that yourself. I can't read the book to you and help you get defeated. Now, I had a wonderful sponsor, Cliff S. And Cliff Davis, I gave his anonymity, which doesn't matter, it's AA. Cliff would always say when somebody was just babbling away, buy them more booze. Now, step two in the big book just says, are you willing to believe or do you believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity, can relieve this obsession? It's on page 47, I believe. We ask ourselves one question. Now, he's written 44, 5, 6, 7. Getting you the idea that you need help and that you have help available to you, not why you won't seek help. You get the difference? And then he asks, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? It's not complicated. It's not a difficult step that you have to spend hours on. As soon as a man can say that he does believe or he's willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven upon us that upon the simple cornerstone, a wonderful, effective spiritual structure can be built. And the spiritual structure is the arch to freedom. And we want to build this arch so we can move from freedom, from the bondage to me, to service and God and living in the world of the Spirit. Steps 1 to 9 get you into that world, and then 10 and 11 keep you through the arch in 12. Now, in the big book, he gives you reasons why we need to believe, not reasons why we won't believe. You see what I'm saying? Do you want to pass, do you want to give up on your reason? You can accept faith, things that you can't believe. Is God everything or nothing to you? What is your choice to be? It says when you, and this is an important point, that are you, when you learned that you were an alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, is God everything or nothing? What's your choice to be? And that's really the deal. When you're crushed by your self-imposed crisis, are you willing to face the question that God is everything or nothing? And then it says, what is your choice to be? So your choice is God everything makes you willing to believe, because when you're driven here by the lash of alcoholism and you we learned we had to concede that we were alcoholics. And so, I don't know, I can't find that page. I guess I'm getting too old. But it's in here in We Agnostics. I'll find it in a little bit. And then they talk about the bedevilments and how these bedevilments, we cannot solve them. We have to have God solve them. Now, in the 12 and 12, he talks about what makes us reluctant to believe in God, why alcoholics won't do that. But to me, alcoholics who aren't willing to believe, their minds still shut, and the only thing that can open an alcoholic's mind is step one, to take it completely. Does this make sense? If you're completely defeated, you're willing to go to any length. If you want what we have, you're willing to do whatever it takes. And he talks about people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. People who can't see the truth about their situation. That moment when you can see the truth and you can't deny that I'm screwed and I can't fix this and I don't want to go on anymore. And you ask God for help. To me, that's what bottom is. It's not the DUI or the wife throwing you out. It's that moment where you see the truth, you can't deny it anymore, and you say, I can't fix this. I need help. And so I could see the difference. It's not good or bad. And so we're on page 27, and he writes, AA's tread on the second paragraph, innumerable paths in their quest for faith. But remember, he's gonna interchange faith and belief here. But the big book talks about belief. And you start with belief, and how do you get faith in AA through the steps? Through knowledge of God, trusting God, and you can see God is doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. And you start that process in step one, but in step four, you see how your life run on self-will didn't work. You learn how to ask God to free you from anger, and when you use that, he does, and you trust him. how God can free you from fear, and when you do that, it happens. And then 6 and 7 is where you're asking God to change your character all the time when it's coming up and it's blocking you from Him, and it happens. And 8 and 9 is where you lose fear of people, because when you make amends, then you get free. And it happens. And then these promises are read at every meeting. And the promises are what happens when you're with God. You know peace. You know serenity. Fear falls from you. Feeling of uselessness goes away. Things happen. And then that brings you into step 10, is which in where you want to live each day so they continue to happen. So I don't know that they're really the 9th step promises or the 10th step promises. They're the world of the spirit promises. They're the promises that happen when you're with God. Now, I can tell you the promises that don't happen when you're with God. You're disturbed, you're angry, you're fearful, you're judgmental, blah, 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 blah. You know, the blah, blah, blah covers everything. And so you see, we want a quest for faith, but we have to start belief. And he says, you can make AA itself your higher power. And I hear that a lot, because people have read this, and it sounds very good. And here's a large group of people who have solved their alcohol problem. There are people in here today who have solved their alcohol problem. If we have a new person in here, he might see from what we our experience, how something's happened to us. Now, Joe and Charlie have that really nice chart where they show the group, and they have the new member in the center and these old members all around them. And then it shows how there's an arrow, and it says willing to believe, to take, pick up the kit of spiritual tools. So the new member becomes willing to do that and pick up the kit because of the old members. And then he does the kit of spiritual tools, and he becomes an old member. So an old member in AA was somebody who worked the steps. It had nothing to do with time, and who had this relationship with God. So if you come to AA, there are people here who are can show you that there is an answer. That makes you willing to believe to do what they did, or to want to have what they have. So AA can be a very good higher power in the beginning. And you can believe what they say. Remember, it says in there, if you can believe everything, the doctor's opinion ends it, you can believe everything these people say. It's true. Now, what can you say more than that? And so getting to page 28, he has this line, relieved of the alcohol obsession, their lives unaccountably transformed, they came to believe in a higher power. Now, I don't agree with that. I think you have to believe in the higher power to have the alcohol obsession and the transformation. I think belief comes first. And or he's saying that you realize you're not drinking, that there's something working in your life, and then you believe that that's God. And so that I think is what he's saying. And then most of them began to talk of God, because there's something working, because I couldn't do anything. This is a difficult book to exposit on, by the way, because it's a very intellectual, very beautifully written, a lot of thoughts and sequence. Consider next the plight of those who once have faith. So he's talking about people who have faith who've lost it. They have drifted into self-sufficiency. Anybody identify with that? Who have cut themselves off from God. Now, in the 4th step, we're going to face and be rid of the things that have cut me off from God. But when you come to step 2, you have to be willing to believe that there is a God, and you have to see that you have cut yourself off. But sometimes you can't see that till you become convinced that a life run on self-will can never work, and that's the requirement for step 3. Then they tell you why it didn't work, and then you make a decision not to play God anymore. You see how it flows? They've become prejudiced against religion, prejudiced against a lot of things. And those who are downright defiant because, I love this, God has failed to fulfill their demands. Wow, there you go. God didn't fulfill my demands. So God is like a Amazon, and you order, you place your order, and then it's supposed to be delivered in 2 days. Well, I didn't get the order. What's going on here? Can AA experience tell at least they may still have a faith that works? Sometimes AA comes harder to those who have lost or rejected faith than those who have never had faith in the all. And I don't know what AA comes harder to, for they think they have tried faith and found it wanting. Now, the agnostic means without knowledge of God, and it means that you've never allowed God to work in your life. So you could believe or not believe, but you've played God, so he could never had the opportunity to work. And we couldn't see him working in our life. They have tried the way of faith and the way of no faith. Well, they tried the way of faith in themselves, right? And then the way of no faith in God. And neither one is going to be really good, right? And it says, since both ways has proved bitterly disappointing, they have concluded there's no difference whatever for them, no place for them to go. So the roadblock to step two, and probably to step one, is indifference, fancied self-sufficiency, prejudice, and defiance. Often prove more solid and formidable for these people than any erected by an unconvinced agnostic or even the militant atheist. And so I wrote indifference, self-sufficiency, prejudice, defiance. That has to die. That attitude has to die enough to become willing to believe in God. And if that hasn't died enough to be willing to believe in God, you probably have not admitted fully that you're powerless over alcohol and that your life was unmanageable by you. Religion says the existence of God can be proved. I don't know if that's true. I think the Old and New Testament is a testimony and witness to God. And I think there's something that happens when people study that book that makes them believe. And I can argue the existence of God with an atheist and show him intellectually why it may not make sense. Alan's here. I talked to Alan once about the wildebeest. And what makes the wildebeest in May start to walk 1,000 miles south, and then they turn around in October, November, so they can fertilize the whole plain. Now, did they all wake up one day and have a meeting and say, let's go south? No, something happened to them. Why is the earth not 1 mile closer to the sun and we burn up? Why is the moon just in the right place? If you study a human cell, how complicated it is. But you can do all that and you still can't prove the existence of God to them. They have to open their mind and see it for themselves. But religion is an attempt to give a testimony by people who believe just like we do in the meetings. So religion sometimes has a bad name, but that's what it's trying to do. The agnostic says it can't be proved, and the atheist claims proof of the non-existence of God. Yet we read at a lot of meetings, suddenly realize God can do for us what we could not do for ourselves. And we call whatever that power is God. Now, what we call God in AA is that which has all power. May you find him now. Maybe we should say her. Him or her, it doesn't matter. That's how we define God. And God is not me. And it's that which has all power. And you need to find him. Then we read, God can and will if he is sought. what can he and will he do? He can relieve us to alcoholism. He can restore society. He can manage our lives. And it says in We Agnostics that when you seek him, he will reveal himself to us. So you don't need to worry about who God is or what God is when you're willing to believe, just that it's a power greater than you, it's one that has all power, and if you do these steps, it will be revealed to you. And you see, and it, when it's revealed to you, then you have faith, because it's working in your life. You're 6 months sober, you say, wow, I haven't drank for 6 months. How'd that happen? You see? And, oh, I didn't react like I usually do in the food store, you know, or I kept my mouth shut, or I didn't send the email. You see, something's happening. You're reacting differently than you did before, and that's God. You can't take credit for it except that you're allowing God to work in your life. AA is about getting everything out of your mind that, so God can work. And then, any number of AAs can say to this drifter, yes, we were diverted from our childhood faith too. See, they're arguing with the person who doesn't want to believe in God. The overconfidence of youth was too much for us. Of course, we were glad that we got home training and religious training. We came convinced that such rules of fair play and decency would be enough. And then he says, as material success founded upon no more than these ordinary attributes of honest, tolerance, ambitions, and hard working began to come to us, we felt we were winning at the game of life. Now that's alcoholism. We want material success, we want people to like us, so we feel better about ourselves. Then when it's working, we think we're winning. But when it's not working, we think it's God's fault. That's good, I should say that again. When we're winning, it's great. We're getting approval, but when we're losing, it's God's fault. Yeah, it couldn't be us. Yeah, I'm not gonna tell you what happened to me Tuesday trying to do the pull, that's too much. But I've told everybody. Everybody who's talked to me since then, all right, stop, Brian. Brian's misbehaving. Why should we be bothered with theological abstraction or religious duties or with the state of our souls here or after? The here and now is good enough for us. The will to win would carry us through. Now, isn't this like what he writes in his story, Bill W.? The drive for success was on. He had the will to win. It took a lot to get Bill W. defeated. In fact, he's drinking himself to death on a Saturday morning in November, and Ebbie Thatcher comes in, and he tells him he has a religious idea and a simple program of action, and Bill's dying, and he's just pissed off because Ebbie won't drink with him, and he can enjoy the day, and Ebbie's talking to him about God, and he didn't want to hear any of it. And then Ebbie said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Now, that isn't in this chapter. Choose your own conception of God. And then Bill says he couldn't argue with that. And then the icy intellectual mountain, now think of it. He had built an icy intellectual mountain and he lived in the shadow of it. How'd that work for him? And he says once he accepted that, he saw the light, a new light came in and he could see God. He could see that there was a different way. And how many people have lived in an icy intellectual mountain, shivering in it? And it's, we have built this mountain based upon us, between us and God. He said, the will to win would carry us through. Well, we know that doesn't work. The will to win made my life more unmanageable. Anybody relate to that? I'm gonna try harder. It says that in the big book. We tried harder. We tried whatever character would work to get our way. Finally, we all had scorecards that read zero. We should ask a new person when they come in, how's your scorecard? How's it doing? Zero. We saw that one more strike would put us out of the game forever. we had to look for our lost faith. And that's a really good line. Because when you see, but you have to see your scorecard as zero to get rid of the indifference, the self-sufficiency, the prejudice, the defiance. You see what I mean? And I can't make somebody see that their scorecard's zero. Now, have you ever seen somebody come in and you know their scorecard's zero, but they think they still got a plan, or they don't need to go to meetings every day or once a week, they don't need to book, they don't even need to call you every day, every other day at work. You get it? And so their scorecard is like one. And remember, step zero is when you come to AA and you haven't done any work and you have no relationship with God. And how long can you stay at step zero in AA before you drink again? That's why I try to get people into the book and through the steps quickly. And all that's done in people who can't see that their scorecard is zero is they fire me. They get mad at me. I'm driving them crazy. I'm very unreasonable. You're dying of alcoholism. I want you to read three pages. No, no, it's too much. It's too much. And I used to drive myself crazy, because that worked when you're practicing cancer medicine, because you're devoted to trying to help people. You have compassion. You want to do everything you can. In AA, it just pisses people off who aren't at step zero. And I think I've pissed a lot of people off, and I hope they forgive me. And it says, stop, Mark. It was in AA that we rediscovered it, and so can you. So that's a very complicated few paragraphs, but it makes some really good points, right? The person has to see step zero. They're not going to, that there's their scorecard zero, and they're not going to see it till they get rid of the things, their obstinacy and their defiance. Now here's another problem. He's talking again about people who won't do it. Intellectually self-sufficient. We have any of those there? I'm looking at a few. To these many, and I was one of them. I mean, I'm intellectually self, you know, Michael the Magnificent, you know. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Yes, we like you, but you're far too smart for your own good. We love to have people call us precocious. We used our education to blow ourselves up into prideful balloons. The guy says he has, you know, 3 degrees. He says, thermometer has degrees, and we put it up your ass, right? And I said it wrong, but you know, I can't remember it exactly, but that was the point. Yeah, it's of no use to you. Stick it up your ass. There you go. Brain power alone. Knowledge was all powerful. Intellect could conquer nations. Now, he says, the God of intellect displaced the God of our fathers. And he talks about that very well in We Agnostics, that we worship the God of reason. We worshiped it. It's our mind. It's us. And until we could move from the shore of reason to the shore of faith, nothing could happen. And the bridge between that is the steps. And he says that once we are willing to move away from the God of reason, things start to happen for us. But John Barleycorn says, had other ideas. We had won so handsomely in a walk, turned into all-time losers. And we say, how did this happen? We saw that we had to reconsider or die. You see, there again, he's talking about the step one decision. We found that many in AA once thought as we did, and that's helpful. But here's, by your example, he says, you have to show us that humility and intellect could be compatible. But here's the deal. You have to put humility first. And we don't talk enough about humility, but step one makes you humble. And until you're humble, you won't see the need for God. Until you're completely humbled of your own power, you're not going to look for another way. And so humility is really the first requirement to receiving God in your life. And then here's the deal. We talk about doing step one every day. Anybody ever heard that? Anybody think it's a good idea? Because step one makes you humble. It says when we wake up in the morning, we consider our plans for day. Before we do that, we ask God to direct our thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. And why do we do that? Because we understand that without God, nothing good's going to happen that day. And we began to do humility. He says, first, we began receive the gift of faith, a gift that works. And I think you receive the gift of belief, and then by working the steps, you have a faith that works, and it's alive. Because just having belief in AA without the works of the steps won't give you the spiritual awakening. So that's one way to look at faith without works is dead. Here's another one, another person who doesn't want to believe in God. It says, I'm disgusted with religion. Have you ever heard that before? The Bible is full of nonsense. I could cite a chapter verse, and I couldn't see the Beatitudes for the Begats. But maybe they're reading it with a closed mind. Or maybe they never read it, they're just saying this. People will tell me, I don't like the Bible. Some people don't like the big book. You know why? They don't like the way some of the words are. They don't like the third step prayer, because they use thee and thou. Hello, is that alcoholism? I'm dying, but I don't like the wording of the prayer to ask God to save me. Write it a different way, and maybe I'll think about it. You see, and you know what? Being in recovered a long time, we still have the same thinking disorder. We just don't try not to pay attention to it. And we use God to help us do that. They say the morality was impossibly good. You see, they don't want to be accountable, or some impossibly bad. We gloated over the hypocrisy, bigotry, and crushing self-righteousness that clung to so many believers in their Sunday best. So, of course, we want to judge everybody who's going to church, right? We know everything that's wrong with everybody in church. Well, yeah, how's that working for you? You see, and we use it as a reason not to believe in something that's the only solution to save my life. Now, if you point that out to somebody, they won't like that. They don't want to see how the fallacy of their reasoning. This meant that we had substituted negative for positive thinking. After AA, we had come to recognize that this trait had been an ego-feeding proposition. I think it is. Why is seeing something negative, judging somebody bad or something negative, why is that a self... Where did I read it? I can't even see anymore. It was a self... let me see. This meant that we had substituted negative for positive thinking, and it was an ego-feeding proposition. So when I judge somebody that they're not good, what I'm really doing is saying I'm better than them, and building up self-esteem because of my excessive pride, and it's horrible. And I have to stop doing that. I still have to stop doing it. I'm better than I am. What I do is, when I get that, I like to talk about it with other alcoholics. Another alcoholic that day, guess what I did? This one's no good, blah, blah, blah. And realize how stupid it is. And the only thing it does is it disturbs me. And it doesn't do anything to them, but we do it. We'll look around the room. I'm better than this one. He's no good. They're not doing it right. I see it in church among non-alcoholics. And I point out, like a Bible study, something about, well, you know, if we're thinking about ourselves and we're judging other people, you know, we're the ones who are wrong, and it disturbs us. And they kind of look at me like... You know, where is he? He needs to go to a different church. he doesn't understand how scripture works. I mean, really, I have given up. Still tell you, it gets some strange looks. But finally, driven into AA, we learned that this self-righteousness that we had, that we blamed other people of, is killing us. And so you could say to somebody, well, your self-righteousness is killing you. Isn't that really what the... Jesus and the Pharisees, the discussion with the Pharisees was they were self-righteous and they looked down on everybody else as not good enough. And they had that impaired, they couldn't have a relationship with the Father. And then the prodigal son, which we talk a lot about, the prodigal son is really about the son who stayed at the home and how he obeyed all the laws, but he had no relationship with the Father. So his self-righteousness blocked him from a relationship with his Father. So the Father comes out and says, come to the banquet. Come to the banquet. And we don't know if they ever went in. And that's Jesus really saying, come to the table. Come to the table and with me and have a relationship with your Father. And so, but you can't do that till you give up on your own righteousness. And that's what the humility is all about. God, I'm really blabbering today. I better stop. I'm at 35 minutes. Where am I in this? All right, I'm just going to read this because Mark's here today. Defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many an alcoholic.
He's not even in.
Oh, good. All right. So it's strange that a lot of us have had our day at defying God himself. And so we'll pick up with defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many an alcoholic. It's hard to go through this real fast, so we're not in a hurry, are we?
No.
So you see, it's a very good book to read if you've studied the big book, and then you use this as John Y. called it like a concordance. This is additional information that you can see if you've worked the steps. If you're new and reading it, it sounds good, but I don't know if it has the same meaning. Because I remember I read it when I was new, and I said, wow, that's really good. And I don't know that I understood it because I didn't understand the book, and I didn't work the steps. All right, thank you, everybody.